Okay, we are on page 211-212 still, and chapter 41 in the English numbers. In the top numbers, it's 114. We're on the first narrow line at the bottom of the page. Okay, the Alter Rebbe has been talking about the need for kavanin, a balanced approach to love and fear in doing our mitzvahs, is what he's talking about in this chapter, and with that we will continue.
We're further up.
We finished with the note.
Oh,
just to go back. Okay, and even though it's true, he's talking about this whole idea of having kavanas and able to draw down godliness into this world, the infiniteness of Hashem through his intentions and connecting to the will of Hashem. So he says, even though this kavana is true in his heart, that his heart really desires to cleave to Hashem, which is the ultimate, this is the ultimate kavana behind every mitzvah, that I want to establish a relationship with Hashem such that is palpable. Okay, that's ideally that's what we want. Our neshamas are dying for this, and a person's going through the motions. And he says, just going through the motions is also a good thing, because at least that way you're in the right frame of mind, even though you might not feel it. So terribly erba ava rabo la Hashem levade las is nachas ruach lefanav. So what's the basic kavana? Is that he only has love for Hashem, and in order to cause Hashem nachas, to make Hashem happy. And not to quench his thirst for godliness, Lashem. He said before in chapter, 10. Like a son who tries to do more for his father, have more mercy on his parents than he does for himself. Mm-hmm. Nonetheless, a person should custom himself to going through these motions. Even though he doesn't really absolutely truly feel it, it's not totally there. But just there is something there. There is still that connection. Simply because we are, as he explained in chapter 18, genetically Jewish, and this is written into our DNA code that a Jew doesn't want nor can he be separated from Hashem. So that little strand of connection, which is subconscious, is always going to be there when a person does a mitzvah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a very interesting thing. The difference in feeling towards Yiddishkeit, the difference between Ashkenazim and Sephardim. And it may have something to do with the environment in which they were raised, Europe as opposed to the Arab countries. But, you know, you have a Sephardi who's totally and completely not interested in doing anything Jewish. And you look him in the eye and you say, hey, let's put on tefillin right now. Stops whatever he's doing and puts on tefillin. And he says the Shema, and he may even cry. And he takes the tefillin off. And he goes back and he does everything that he was doing before, all the kol davar aser, whatever it was, all the nonsense that he was involved in before. And Ashkenazi, you tell him, hey, come on, let's put on tefillin. I want to know the why of tefillin, the where of tefillin, how of tefillin, what am I going to get out of this business over here? And by the time the guy does say yes, so now you've got like this commitment. There's like, yeah, I put on tefillin that time. And it's like, you know, it leaves this like indelible impression in them. Mm-hmm. So one's a quick flash, happens and goes very quickly. It's like one of the difference between a longer, shorter way, the shorter, longer way. Mm-hmm. You know?
Absolutely.
But, so with Ashkenaz, with the Sephardim, you could see this like natural love for Judaism. Right. It's like very on the surface.
The Althusser said that it was because the Sephardim were not inflicted with European philosophy.
Yeah, it's got something to do with the whole environment in which they were raised. Yeah, you know, so. Hmm. No, I don't know if I've ever said this on tape, but I think before I teach every class, I think I have to go back and listen to every shiur online, make sure I don't repeat myself. So, but in Seattle, there were two shuls, they're probably still there, that are right across the street from each other. They're both called Bikur Cholim. Mm-hmm. Except one of them is called Bikur Cholim, the other one is called Bikur Cholim.
Aha.
One's Sephardi, one's Ashkenazi. What's the difference? The Sephardi, the Ashkenazi one, has a chain across the parking lot. The mechitza is exactly 5.5 feet high, according to Moshe Feinstein. The rabbi has, the rabbi's a Talmud Chacham, not to be too, but he's got a, when I was there, he was a shaved beard, was totally clean shaven, and now he's got, the one who's there now is has a very trim beard. Mm-hmm. And the drushes that he gives are quite esoteric and in philosophy and theory and Judaism. Okay, the Sephardi one across the street, the rabbi's got a huge beard.
Maimon.
It used to be Rabbi Maimon, yeah. The shul has a balcony for the ladies with a machitza. Not just a balcony, a machitza, a proper thing over there. The rabbi gives fire to kedrushes about why aren't they mavering the sedra. The parking lot Shabbos morning is full.
Okay.
So it's go figure.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's not to say that the guys aren't driving to the Ashkenazi one. It's just they have a chain; they have to park around the corner. You know, because they're embarrassed to have to like drive to shul. Whereas the Sephardi, no problem. We drive to shul, and the rabbi better tell us a good drasha, tell us how bad we are, otherwise we're not paying him. You know, so.
Rabbi Maimon.
Go figure.
Rabbi Emeritus there.
Yes.
Is a Ben Acher Ben from another Maimon.
Yeah. So the descendant of the Rambam.
Yeah, descendant of the Rambam.
Yeah. B'kol mashuhu rotzein ha'elyon baruch hu v'yichud zeh. I think I skipped something. Anyway, Las is kol ma, to do everything that is the Hashem's will. V'yichud zehu ritzayno amiti. And truly, every Jew, whether they know it or not, really wants to be connected to Hashem. A big mouthful over here. What does that mean? That means that the person, what kind of unity do they want? Listen, we travel first class. We want a complete unity, a unity like the unity which exists in Atzilus.
Right.
That Atzilus is described as Ihu v'chayehu chad, Ihu v'garmehu chad. That Hashem and His life in Atzilus is one, and Hashem and the effects are one. Hmm. Meaning the Oros and the Kalim are totally and completely united with Hashem in Olam Atzilus, such that we can say that there is nothing else except Hashem and Atzilus.
Right.
Because what do we call, how do we define Atzilus? You have Hashem's 10 attributes there.
Right.
The main thing there is the infiniteness,
right,
which is expressed there. As it says, Eser Sfiros Bli Ma. You have 10 spheres, but they are without end.
Right.
They have no mahus of something, of a something. They don't exist as a something or separate from Hashem.
Right.
They have no limitations other than the fact that they have parameters defining them as this is Chachma, this is Bina, this is Chesed, this is Gevura. Other than that, they are total and complete godliness.
Yeah.
And they are totally and completely united with Hashem in an ultimate unity, one which cannot be described in physical terms because it has nothing to do with spiritual, with physicality whatsoever.
Right.
Ultimately, that's what our neshama wants, because that's how our neshama is manifest into this world. It stops off in Atzilus, and from there it goes through the creation process until it gets stuffed into our body. So at some point in its manifestation, our neshama is, in a primordial way, totally and absolutely connected with Hashem.
Yeah.
to such an extent that you can't even say that there's anything difference between Hashem and the Neshama. Just as you couldn't say there's anything different between Chesed of Atzilus and Hashem. So that's the unity that we want. V'hiskalalus bo'or Hashem. To be totally and completely incorporated in the light of Hashem, which is enclosed in the Torah and the mitzvahs in which he's doing. And because what does it happen? So it says there are three connections which are made. You have Hashem is connected to the Torah, and the Torah which is connected to the Jewish people, and through that the Jewish people are connected to Hashem. And we've said many times, starting way back in chapter 5, that what's the Torah is the will and wisdom of Hashem, and the mitzvahs are those extensions of Hashem's ratzon that come down and manifest in a physical way.
Right.
And so by a person engaging in Torah and mitzvahs in this physical world, the person unites their neshama with this infinite of Hashem.
Right.
And even though the person doesn't feel it, well, we talked about last week, who says most of the neshama is outside of your body anyway. And so that part which is outside of your body that you're not aware of is for sure connected.
Fortunate for my neshama.
So, yeah, Baruch Hashem. Now that a person knows chapter 41, and they're sitting and learning, or sitting and doing a mitzvah, so what are they going to do now? It says, hey, Taka, I should be doing it like it says I should be doing it in chapter 41. I'm doing this mitzvah, I'm going to be connected to Hashem in an infinite connection, something which is going to totally and completely benefit my neshama, and garam anachas ruach to Hashem, and fulfill the purpose of creation. Yes. Got a question, Yaakov? Okay. And they, and it would be that he and this soul, his soul and Hashem, become absolutely one thing. Moshe's Borel El is explained before. Ki al yedei zeh nisyachedim gam kein makar hatorah hamitzvos shehu akadosh baruch hu im makar nefesh nafshei alakis hanikra b'shem shechina. Because what happens is when a person does the Torah and the mitzvahs with the proper kavanah, so where is the Torah and the mitzvahs coming from? They're coming from something we call a kudsha brichu, a kadosh baruch hu, the male aspect of Hashem. Where's our neshama coming from? Our neshama is coming from something which we call, which we defined last week as Knesset Yisrael, the congregation of Israel, which is also called in the Zohar Shekhinah. So when we say l'shem yuchud kutsu brichu u'shchinta liach d'shem yudke b'vavke v'yachida shalom b'shem kol yisrael, every day before davening, we're uniting the male and female aspect of Hashem. How is that? Because we're doing a mitzvah. I have a mitzvah in my hand. Where is the mitzvah coming from? The mitzvah is coming from a kodesh baruch hu, the male aspect of Hashem. Male being defined as the initial giver of our mashpia, that which is the supplying the influence. What am I? What are we? We are the manifestations of the divine presence in this world. And so when we're taking this mitzvah, which is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we're doing it, that we're coming from Shekhinah, so we're automatically, therefore, uniting the Shekhinah with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And how so? B'yichud Shelim, with a complete unity, an absolute unity. And that's why it could be that it's B'Shem Kol Yisrael, that we can have an effect on Kol Yisrael, since it is that most of our neshama is, of all of us, are not enclosed in our bodies. So anything which is going on spirituality, every single neshama is going to be able to pick up on it.
Right.
Okay? Is this like Reiki? Yeah, I suppose they got it from us too. I'm not going to go into what Reiki is, sorry, but, you know, those are the people who get together and pray and try to do energy over the entire world by putting their hands together and doing all kinds of other stuff.
There's a Hasidic guy in Borough Park.
There's people over here in Detroit also, yes. I'm not going to talk about Reiki people, because, listen, if you can tap into energy, gesunte hate. Whatever works, as we say. But this is how we do it. And you put your tzitzis together in the front when you say Baruch Shamar, and you say this is what's happening. Provided, there's one caveat, you don't get in the way.
Yes.
With your own nonsense.
Yes.
And he brings in another point. Okay, where are the mitzvahs coming from? Do we remember we said that there are two systems involved with the creation? One says this is a, we said this toward the beginning of the chapter, chapter 40-41. The mitzvahs are coming from Soviv Kolomim. They're an expression of divine will. Will is encompassing. It's an expression of Keser, if you like that terminology. It's what Hashem wants. Want is encompassing. Our neshamas are from Mamali. Our neshamas had to go through the processing of tzimtzuming, of all the contractions and the containments to be enclosed, hence the word Mamali, filling the physical world. So when it is that we do a mitzvah, so there's us who are the Mamali, there's the mitzvah which is the Soviv, and we are therefore uniting the two. In other words, it's a different way of saying the same thing. If you didn't like Kusha Brichu or Shchinte, well, okay, so it's Yichud or Mamali or Soviv.
Right.
Whatever floats your boat. Okay? They are, it's essentially the same idea. Okay? Yeah? So he continues. If anybody feels like they need a seatbelt, just let me know. Avol Yichud Nafshay V'his Kalalusa Bo'or Hashem. But the unity of his soul and its incorporation in the light of Hashem, L'yoyis Le'achadim, that he should be totally united. B'zechof is kol Adami Yisrael be'emes la'amita legamri b'chol leiv v'chol nefesh ma'ave tevi yisamasuteres b'leiv kol Yisrael l'dafka b'ay. This, every single Jew desires this absolute unity. Every single Jewish soul wants it because of the natural love which is hidden in the heart of every single Jew to cleave to Hashem. V'layli faridli hi yais nikeres v'nivdol chas v'shalom yehudi yisborach. And not to do anything to separate himself and to be like foreign and separate from Hashem, chas v'shalom, from his unity. B'shum oifen. In any way, even if it involves mesiras nefesh mamish, even if it involves self-sacrifice, this is where it is that it could be that a person could have martyrdom. I think we talked about martyrdom. Where would we have talked about martyrdom? Oh, like in chapter 24, in that area, where we talked about not doing negative commandments. It says every cause has martyrdom. You got a cause, martyrdom for the cause is the best thing. Okay, so if that be the case then, so what's so unique about being a martyr for Judaism? It's another cause.
Doesn't ask you to do it.
Yes, it does.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Where?
All over the place. I'll pull out Shulchan Aruch. I'll show you where one verse. If you got somebody who wants to be, someone says, bow down to this idol or I will kill you. You have to allow yourself to get killed.
100%, but it's not...
Someone says, that's called martyrdom. It's a kaddish. Right, it's called a martyr. Someone says, eat this ham sandwich in front of 10 places. People. Someone says, eat this ham sandwich in front of 10 people. Wow. That person has to allow himself to get killed rather than eat the ham sandwich. Okay, that's called martyrdom. So what's the difference between that and blowing oneself up for 70 virgins? The answer is why is the guy blowing himself up? For the 70 virgins.
For somebody he's going to get.
Yeah, right. there's always a piece of the action that they're looking for.
That's a preferable thing. In our case, we're not being asked to sacrifice ourselves. We're not being asked to do the ultimate Mesiras Nefesh.
What are you talking about?
Within Yiddishkeit, okay, if we have to martyr ourselves, as you're calling it, okay, it's as a last resort.
Yeah, of course.
Okay. In other places.
Yeah, because once a person martyrs themselves, they ain't not doing anything else.
Right. But
so you're right. It is the last thing they're going to do.
Right, but in...
I don't recommend it at all.
Well, like in Islam, if they're going to be Mesiras Nefesh.
We don't go illicit martyrs.
Right. We're not like going, thank you. Right. We're not eliciting it. We're not saying, oh, great, let's do it.
Right. Because we're smart. Hello. Martyrdom hurts.
No, probably not for a second.
But what's the difference?
For a while. Right?
Yes. What's the difference is martyrdom and all the other causes is, well, what do I get out of the deal?
Dead.
No, I get the 70. I get the 70 virgins.
No, you don't.
I get the whatever it is. No, you That's don't. What they think they're getting. I don't want to eat this.
Yeah,
there's something there. No, it's an expression. It's an expression. Hello. It's not good. This is all being recorded. Okay. It's because the Rebbe explains this in a mimer. I think it's in, what do you call it? Come on, brain. Ante Tzitzave, the last mimer that the Rebbe handed out. Mm. The idea of martyrdom by a non-Jew is an expression of chaya. He wants to do it. Okay, there's something that he's going to get out of the deal.
Right.
Okay, even if it's just to get his name on the papers and show that he died for the cause.
Right.
That's
right.
Why he's doing it.
Right.
Whereas a Jew is suffering martyrdom because they can't separate themselves from Hashem.
Right.
It's got nothing to do with how's it going to look on paper. And they're not thinking of getting any promise, even though we're told that the Kedoshim have the highest place next to Moshe Rabbeinu up in Shema. That's, no one's thinking that when they're saying Shema Yisrael.
Probably not, no. Yeah.
So. Well, I don't know. There is a story of the Holocaust where they went into a Gary Yeshiva and told them, you guys better start praying because in 10 minutes or something, we're all just, all going to die. And the Rosh Yeshiva stood up and said, we're about to be martyrs. We're going to get to the highest place of Gan Eden. I think this is the time to dance. And so he took all the bachur and they started dancing in a big circle. And the Nazis killed them as they were dancing. And one of the Nazis wrote in his journal, today we killed angels. So, you know. What was he thinking? I don't know. It's one way of spitting in your attacker's face. I don't want to know.
Yeah, I don't want to know.
And if anybody wants to comment it online, they can reach me at the contact page. Anyway. Wow. The Isaac Torah mitzvahs, the hatfilah who gam kein inyan mesiras nefesh mamish. And there's different ways of interpreting this. When one occupies in learning Torah and doing mitzvahs and davening, that's also an expression of Mesiras Nefesh. Because what does it have? It's the word Mesiras Nefesh means giving over his soul. And on a very on a cruder level, a person wakes up in the morning, there's a lot of things they could do instead of going to shul. Like first of all, they can sleep for another 45 minutes. The fact that a person has to rip themselves out of bed to go do whatever has to get done in his morning avoda is also a level of Mesiras Nefesh. You have to remember that there are five levels of Nefesh. Mm. Nefesh, Ruach, Neshama, Chaya, and Yechida. And each one of those levels has a Mesiras Nefesh. The Mesiras Nefesh of Yechida Shiva Nefesh is allowing oneself to get killed. Mm. Okay, and there is a Mesiras Nefesh. It's cold outside. The heat hasn't gone on fully yet in the house. You're very snug and warm. You went to sleep too late last night.
My kids are you so could, missing school in the morning.
Whatever the thing is, you know. Just five more minutes.
Yeah,
all those things, you know. So when a person says, no, I'm getting up because that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
That's called Mesiras Nefesh.
Yeah.
Without unequivocal. That's a level of Mesiras Nefesh because you really don't want to do it. And why are you doing it? Because this is what's demanded. This is what Hashem wants. So I'm reminded of a story that I was once flying to New York on a Thursday afternoon. Mm. And there was a Bacharan, Yeshiva was on the plane. Mm. So he said, I thought all the Bacharan went on the morning flight. So he said, I just proved the Hanhala wrong. The Hanhala said, you know, why don't you get up in the morning for Seder? If you had to go catch a plane, you would get up. So he said, I had to go catch a plane. I slept through. So Ukemaim betseisa min haguf b'malah shivim shana she'ein ha'harares b'tzarechi haguf ela machshavam yuchadisam l'beshes b'oisis ha'tera v'hatfilah. As it says, that after about 70 or so years, when a person's soul is ready to leave his body, he's not thinking about the needs of his body. At that point, he's not thinking about getting himself a condo or a new set of golf clubs or the early bird special. But he's thinking about trying to get closer to Hashem. So as it is, my new clientele is becoming of an older nature. The people who 20 years ago, when they were in their late 40s and 50s, were too busy. They're too busy for God. Now, 20 years later, in their late 60s, early 70s, and their bones are starting to creak a little bit, and if they're collecting Social Security and all that, so. No, I better go say hello to God. You know, whatever works. Right. I don't mind. Money's good. So, Elamachshavim yuchadisam l'beshes b'oisis ha'Torah v'hatfilah shehein dvar Hashem u'machshavos yisbarach, that the words of the Torah and the study are the speech of Hashem and His thoughts. V'hayu le'achadim mamish, and they become one mamish. Zehu kol ha'oisik ha'neshamas began Eden. And this is what the neshamas are doing in Gan Eden, as is brought down in the Gemara and the Zohar. Now what are they doing? It says that the food of the neshama is the Torah that you learned in this world. He said this already way back when in chapter 5. And the garments, which means how much godliness you are privileged to experience, is due to the mitzvahs that a person did. Since it is that the mitzvahs are an external expression, they're makifim, they come from this external level of godliness, from Hashem's will, which is external. So therefore, they are, the reward for doing a mitzvah is a garment which allows the person to experience a greater amount of godliness. It's like going out in the sun on a very hot day. If you're wearing more clothing, you're going to less likely chance of getting burnt. So the neshama can experience more godliness the more mitzvahs it does in this world. What is the neshama doing? It's quote-unquote eating. And what is it eating? The Torah that it learned in this world. So the more Torah that a person learns in this world, the more they'll have to eat in the world to come. Is that the reason why we're doing them? No.
El Shisham is Anim. Are there any people cold and hungry in Gan Eden?
I'm sure there are.
Yeah, a little concerned about that.
El Shisham. Well, the fact that we know this story from Rabbi Meir, what could be? I mean, Rabbi Meir was very poor. Mm. Rabbi Meir was not very poor. It was somebody else. I don't remember the rabbi's name. And his wife said, "People come to you and they ask you for brachas for wealth, and you give them brachas for wealth, and they get wealthy. So why don't you ask a bracha for wealth for yourself?" So he said, "Okay, good. I could." Where's Rabbi Meir, right? And he davened, and a golden table leg fell out of the sky. Right. His hand came down, put the golden table leg right in front of him. Right. Solid gold. Which was fine, good. Okay. So that night, the wife wakes him up in the middle of the night. "Wake up, wake up. I'm having a dream." What's the dream? They're sitting in Gan Eden. And everybody's sitting at this three-legged table. Except them, they're sitting at a two-legged table. I said, "How come our table only has two legs?" And I said, "Because we gave you the third leg already." So she said, "Take the table leg and tell Hashem to take it back." And so he davened and Hashem took it back. And it says that the greater nais was that Hashem took it back. Because once Hashem does a nais, he doesn't undo it. That's the rule. But for Rabbi Meir, okay, good, you know. Okay, Shasham is angivi his vahasagasim his kalosim bar Hashem v'zeo shetiknu betchilas berchas hashachar kodem atfila. And this is what we say. Why we say at the beginning of davening in the morning brachas, Elokai neshama ata nefachta bi ata asi litla mimeni, that the soul which you Hashem put into me, you blew it into me, etc. And in the future you're going to take it from me, and then you're going to return it back to me afterwards. Kalemir, meaning to say. Since it is that you're the one who blew it into me, and in the future you're going to take it away from me. Lachin ma'ata ani moisro machzira lecha liyachedcha be'achdusacha. So what am I going to do now? I'm going to do the best to take care of it and do whatever it is what you want with it. Yeah, yeah. Since it is, it's only just on a lease. Our neshamas are only on a loaner.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? Actually, they say our bodies are only on loan.
All
right. Okay, so since it is that our bodies are only on loan, so I'm going to use it the best way I can possibly do. What am I here for? When a person gets to Gan Eden, they're going to ask you, how many cookies did you eat? So...
I'm in trouble.
Start not eating now, yes.
I wish I had your cookie problem.
Yeah. Lachain. I wish it was only cookies. Lachain ma'ata ani ma'isru miyuchedis l'chal yuchedwa. Because the commercial comes to ve'lecha v'ayin nafshi eses. It says to you, Hashem, I lift up my soul. Da'ayin al yidei his kashrus ma'chshavtu v'machshav v'isecha v'divorai v'divorecha. That means through binding my thoughts with your thoughts and my speech with your thought, but you see a Torah v'hatfila through the letters of Torah and study, ubeprat ba'amira la'Hashem l'neichach, and specifically at the time when we're talking face to face with Hashem, when we say Baruch Atah Hashem, when we say you, the only time you could say you is if you're standing in front and face to face. So when you say Baruch Atah Hashem by Shemena Esrei, you're talking to Hashem
directly,
and similar times. Okay, he uses this expression "hithkashus," and recently, in learning with someone, developed an example for this concept of hithkashus. Hithkashus, he said back in chapter 3, is an expression of das. What's das? Adam yada eschava. Man knew Eve. That he was a person is miskasha machshavta v'yitko etc. He makes it. He depthens in his mind and he makes a real permanent bond. Okay, what's his permanent bond? Such that if anything were to take away from it, the person would just feel as though there is something missing. That's the connection that a person has to have with Hashem, with the Torah and the mitzvahs. So, what's the example? For those on tape, I'm holding up my cell phone. What happens when you walk out of the house and you left this on the kitchen table? You turn around and you drive back and you go get it because you're out of sorts. You feel something's missing. Yeah. So this is the example. This is the lesson. Rav Shem Tov said you should take a lesson in Avodas Hashem for everything that you see or hear. Yeah. So the term he's cautious now is you should feel as connected to Hashem as you are to your cell phone. Like that example?
Yeah, that's just
a little too... It's like people right behind.
That's a little too graphic.
Hit right between the eyes.
Yeah, that's a little too graphic. I love it.
And it's really the best example.
It is a good example.
You know, because you could say, you used to say, you know, you should be connected to Hashem as you are with your wives, but sometimes you just want your wife to leave you alone. You never want your cell phone to be left alone. Nope. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
So, Vihine. This might be a good place to stop, or I should run through the end. Let's finish.
Hold Barrett?
Hold on one more page.
All right.
If it gets too difficult, I'll stop. I'll go back to Vihine. This is like
I'm ready.
Okay. Vihine b'hachana zu shel mesiras nafshi l'Hashem. So now, with this preparation of being ready to give over his life to Hashem, yaskil birchos hashachar. That's how you start your day. Right when you say, Maida ani. So it doesn't say, it's Maida ani. Okay, shehachazarta bi nishmasi rabba amunasecha. What does rabba amunasecha means? You, Hashem, are putting your trust in me that I'm going to get done today what needs to get done without any chachmas, without any excuses. So your mesiras nafesh starts from the second your eyes open up. And you say over here, Baruch atah, v'kein v'achanezu yaskil lumad shir kavua yad achara tevila. And then, who says you should be running away right straight to work? As soon as you get done learning, davening, you got to learn. It says, "Mebeis haKnesses lebeis haMedrash v'acharkach lepas shachar." First, you go to shul, and then you go sit and learn, and then you go eat breakfast. I, it's going to take 5 minutes. It'll take 5 minutes. V'kein be'emsa hayayim. And so too also in the middle of the day. K'edim she'yaskil l'lumayt. Before he sits down to learn. Which that already tells us something right there. That what should a person do in the middle of the day? Should stop what he's doing and sit and learn for a couple of minutes to reconnect, to put our heads back into where they belong. That's why we have mincha. It should at least have this kavana to connect himself to Hashem. That's why it says, a famous medrash, what does Hashem do all day? Okay, so in the first 3 hours of the day, he davens, and the next 3 hours of the day, he learns, and the next 3 hours, he's making shidduchim, and the next 3 hours, he's playing with the Livyosin. Okay, what if Hashem is playing with a big fish? What is playing? What are you, Hashem swimming with the porpoises? What do they call it? The thing of people
swimming with the sharks.
Swimming with the dolphins over there, yeah, not the sharks.
I'm hung up on the davening part.
Yeah. Why? You don't think Hashem should be davening for 3 hours?
Who's he davening to?
What's the purpose of davening? It's to connect. Uh-huh. So Hashem's connecting.
Okay.
It's right. Like you got to connect, Hashem's got to connect.
I hear. Okay.
So, yeah. What's he learning? He's learning himself, right?
What's the parshas of Hashem's tefillin?
About the Jewish people.
Guy Echad Ba'aretz, there's one nation in the land. Okay, so what's Mesachik Be'olivi Yosin? That Hashem's enjoying himself playing with this big fish is the prayer, the mincha prayers of the Jewish people. It's called Mesachik B'Livi Yosin. Hashem loves mincha. Why? Because a person, in order to daven mincha, has to stop what they're doing and go daven. So that stopping and saying, no, there's something more important than what I'm doing right now. You know, I'm going to go daven. Hashem gives a big yes. Okay? K'neidu she'ikr hachana l'shma la'akev hu b'tchilas halimud b'beinanim. Like, the first preparation is that you have to be doing it for the purpose of what it is. Like, for example, k'may get v'sefer Torah. When a person's writing a get, a bill of divorce, he has to, every process of the way that they're doing is, they have to say, this is being done l'shem gerushin Pliny ben Pliny and Pliny's bas Pliny. They sit him down and they give him the paper and he has to give the paper to the scribe and the scribe has to write it and he has to give it to her and she has to take it. And all along the way they're saying, L'shmaya l'shma, for him and for her. And every time a sefer writes a sefer Torah, every time he writes Hashem's name, he has to say l'shem kedusha sefer Torah.
Yeah.
We're not just writing a chumash over here.
Right.
Okay, there were chumashim. People would sit and write chumashim. What's a chumash different than a, we're talking about before the advent of Gutenberg, you know?
Right.
A chumash was also a scroll, but it wasn't written for the sake of the kedusha of a sefer Torah.
If there were mistakes,
if it was mistakes, these things, it didn't have Hashem's name properly written. These type of things, you know. So, shesrichel mishmala akiv v'diyei. Okay, shiamber b'tchilas hakasiva hareini case of l'shem kedusha sefer Torah l'shem l'shma. That he takes the ink, and as soon as he dips the ink into the pen into the ink, he says, I'm doing this in order for the sanctity of a sefer Torah, or for his name and for her name. The Baal Shem Tov says, according to Baal Shem Tov, Baal Shem Tov says that you're learning for a number of hours. Once an hour, a person should stop and say, I'm learning Hashem's holy Torah. Especially if you're learning Gemara. Because in Gemara, you could be sitting there and talking about some legal wrangling going on over there. And Hashem's name, you've been learning for an hour, and not one time did you say the word Hashem.
An hour? Way longer than that.
Okay. I'm saying, you've been sitting and learning for an hour, and you didn't say Hashem's name once.
Right. Yeah.
What are you supposed to do? You have to remind yourself, hello, this is Hashem's Torah that I'm learning. Why does the Baal Shem Tov say you should do this every hour? Because every hour there's a different permutation of Elokus coming into the world. Right. It's like every hour is like a new creation, a new part of the day.
At what time does...
On the hour.
On the hour.
Yep. Da 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 dum. Yep. You have to take a station break.
To make a
station break.
A grandfather clock. It says.
Right.
Where it comes out and says that.
Correct. We're not going to call it a cuckoo clock. Kibuchol shavu shav hu hamshacha zacheres ma'alemes al yainim, because every single hour is a new hamshacha, a new derivation of godliness from the higher worlds, lahachiyos atachtenim, to enliven the lower worlds. And the godliness which was enlivening the world last hour, that dissipates, and now it's a new hour. This is called the Sefer Rotsav Yeshuva, Sefer Yetzirah. This is called running and returning. The godliness comes in and the godliness leaves. Just like you breathe in, you breathe out. Everything in the world is based on this principle. We call it diffusion, you call it osmosis, you call it respiration. However you want to call it, there's always an expression of out, an expression of in, or expression of up, an expression of down. And it even goes down into a molecular and subatomic level as well. The electron flies out, loses its charge, falls back into the nucleus. Then it gets hit with a bunch of charge and flies back out again, only to lose its charge. Okay? Im kol ha-teira v'nasim ha-maisim teirim shol ha-tachtenim ki b'chol shah shoyle v'sirif echad mi-yud-beis tzirufim shem avaya baruch hu b'yud-beis shahs ha-yayim tzirufim shem adnai v'layla k'neida. During the day, you have permutations of the four letters of Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, and at night you have the permutations of the letters of the shem Adnai, as is known. So that's why learning it, that's why it says you should learn v'higisa b'yayimam v'layla. You have to learn day and night. With at least, it says, Perek Echad Shachris and Perek Echad Arvis. I should learn a little bit during the day and learn a little bit at night. Because that way you're tapping into both life forces. The forces which are governed through Shem Hashem, Yud Kei Vav Kei, and the ones which are governed by Shem Adnai, Aleph Dalet Nun Yud. And why is the person doing all of this? Why is the person extending himself, putting out so much effort to the point of Mesiras Nefesh? Is to cause a sense of gratitude to Hashem, a sense of nachas, a pleasure to Hashem. K'mashal simchas ha-melech b'voy Allah b'nai yechide b'seise min ha-shavah. Like, for example, how would a king feel when his only son, the crown prince, is suddenly returned to him from being a captive? So this is what's happened, because they only have this sparks of godliness which are stuck in this physical world, which this world is, we've been talking about since the beginning of the beginning of the Tanya, is Male Klipa V'Sitra Achra, fill full, to the point that any godliness is totally and completely obscured. And like this, when a person does something good and gets into the groove and reveals this godliness which is in the world, it's like we redeemed a captive. And that's what it's called. And kavana zu yamitis be'emes la'amita l'gamra b'chol nefesh me yisrael b'chol eisa b'chol shah ma'ava t'viyesh yo yerushalayim avesena. He says, don't worry if you think you're fooling yourself. Hey, I'm doing this for God. You know, you know, don't think that the person's fooling himself, because there is that spark within him that is actually doing this for God, whether he's aware of it or not. Raksha Sarach Likvoya Itim Lihizbain Begadelus Hashem. He says, but a person has to establish fixed times to sit and to meditate on the greatness of Hashem. Lahasig Lichilo Virachim Sichlim, to develop and reach a fear and love, which is at least intellectual, with kula haiva ula, and perhaps, just maybe, he'll be able to develop a full love and fear, and he won't be just like one of these fledglings, like he talked about in chapter 40.
Right.
Okay, so what's the deal? So when should that be? The Rebbe Rishab suggested that a person should think 5 minutes before davening.
Work
up to it.
What he says right here. B'nei Hashem
l'shachem l'shachem. Yeah, that's how we started the parak.
Right.
5 minutes.
15 years ago, you told me to say that every day before davening. I have it highlighted in my thing, and this is never
never moves.
And this never moves.
Good. Lots of people do it. Okay, to be continued.